Thank you, Mr. Miller. Good morning to everyone. Certainly want to welcome all our guests. We're thankful that you're here with us. Well, brethren, as has been mentioned, God's fall festivals are nearly upon us. They're just around the corner. And this morning, I would like to share with you one of my fondest Feast of Tabernacles recollections. It's from a long time ago, over 40 years ago. I was just a little guy, maybe 6, 7, 8 years old. And this happened to my mother, my sister, my aunt, and myself. Now, those of you who know me well know that I really was not raised in God's church. From my earliest recollections, my father had been a member of the Worldwide Church of God. But my mother never was inclined, never interested in God's church. And so my sister, myself, we accompanied my mom each Sunday to the Methodist church where she had been reared. Dad never pushed his religion on any of us. But like clockwork, every fall, September, October, Dad would load up the family station wagon, the whole family, and we would drive, usually to the Poconos. We all went. And I mentioned my aunt. That was my mother's sister, her only sister. Her name was Alice May, but we all called her Auntie May. And Auntie May always came with us along to the feast. Now, as I've said, we didn't go to church per se. To us, it was just more or less a vacation. But Dad always brought us along. And in fact, he'd even have my mother drive the second car along so that while we were there, Mom, Auntie May, my sister, and myself, we had a vehicle so that we could drive around and take part in, you know, the activities and things there at the Poconos. Every morning, Dad would get up early, sometimes still dark, put on his suit, and he'd leave to go to church. He had to park cars. We would sleep in. We'd go out for breakfast and enjoy the local activities around the area, maybe go to Memory Town. I can remember saving toast from our breakfast to feed the ducks afterwards. That was fun when you're 6 or 7 years old, or even if you're 60. But that was the way that I grew up with memories of the feast. Well, on this particular experience that I want to share with you this morning, it was very much one of those mornings. Dad had gone to church. My mother, my sister, my aunt, and myself had gone for breakfast. We were doing something there in the area. I don't remember what. But Mom said, you know, it's about time, kids. We need to get back to the motel because your dad will be back from church pretty soon, and we want to be there when he gets there. We always did more fun things in the afternoon. Mom said, I'm going to stop at this store up ahead here. I just need to run in. We need something. I don't know what it was anymore. But she said, you kids, just wait here in the car with Auntie May, and I'll be right back, and then we'll go back to the motel. Okay, my sister and I said, that's fine. So we settled back in the back seat. Mom ran into the store. In the front seat, though, Auntie May had been writing postcards. And she said, you know, kids, I'm done. I have just finished my last postcard. I remember seeing up at the other end of the parking lot a mailbox. So I think what I'm going to do is just run up there and mail these postcards. And I'll do that before your mom gets back, and that way it'll save us time later on. But if your mother gets back before I do, let her know where I've gone so that she won't worry about me. Okay, Auntie May, that's what we'll do. Well, Auntie May was off to mail her postcards. A couple minutes later, here comes Mom. Well, where's Auntie May? So my sister and I tell her, okay, Mom says, all right, well, that makes sense. But she said, you know, how long has she been gone? Well, not long, Mom, just a minute or two. She said, well, you know, how about I go ahead and drive the car up to the other end of the parking lot so that it'll save Auntie May that long walk back across the parking lot. Did that sound like a good idea? Well, yeah, Mom, that sounds like a good idea. Okay. So with that, Mom began to drive the car up towards the other end of the parking lot, towards that mailbox. And Mom cautioned us. She said, "Now, kids, look around, because Auntie May could be out there in the parking lot. She could already be headed back this way, and we don't want to miss her." "Okay, okay, Mom." So with that, we made our way up to the other end of the parking lot, and lo and behold, there was the mailbox. But no sign of Auntie May. "Oh, we've missed her. Now what?" "Well," Mom said, "you know, kids, as much as I hate to suggest this, I'm afraid if Auntie May gets back to the other end of the parking lot and sees our car gone, she may worry and wonder, have we left without her? Do you think I should move the car back where it was originally?" "Well, Mom, you're probably right. That's probably the best idea." "Okay, okay," Mom said. So with that, she turned the car around and began to drive back across the parking lot, back towards where we had been parked at first. But Mom cautioned us, "Kids, you really have to look around in that parking lot, because we don't want to miss Auntie May again. She could be out there anywhere, headed back that way. She could have already gotten to the other end and be coming back now. You've got to watch, kids." "Okay, okay, we will, Mom." So with that, Mom starts driving around back towards the other end of the parking lot. And the whole time, she keeps reminding us, "Kids, kids, you need to keep watching. We're watching, Mom, we're watching. Do you see Auntie May?" "No, no, Mom, we don't see her anywhere." Okay. At one point, Mom even stops the car and says, "Kids, look around. Do you see Auntie May out there anywhere?" "No, no, Mom, we don't." So with that, Mom keeps going, and before long, we get to the other end of the parking lot. Mom says, "I think this is just the spot where we were before." "Yeah, yeah, we think so, Mom." No sign of Auntie May. What to do now? Well, we did not have to wait long to decide how we would answer that question. Because all of a sudden, the front seat passenger door was jerked open, and who should fall into the front seat beside my mother? You guessed it, Auntie May. She was gasping for breath. I'll never forget the first words out of my mother's mouth. "Why, sis, you're all out of breath." My sister and I start to snicker in the back seat. Auntie May begins to tell her story. "I saw you clear up at the other end of the parking lot. I waved at you, but you didn't see me. You turned around and drove the other way. So I chased after the car." By now, my sister and I are really starting to giggle. Mom turns around right away. "You kids, pipe down. Your aunt's just been through a traumatic experience." Auntie May continues. "I kept chasing after the car. I was waving. I waved with both arms. I jumped up and down. I thought, surely you'll see me. I think everybody else in the parking lot saw me. They were looking at me, wondering, who's that crazy woman doing jumping jacks out here?" By now, my sister and I are not giggling anymore. We're laughing audibly. Mom's still right on us. "You kids, pipe down." You know, kids, how hard it is to not laugh when an adult tells you to stop. So we're just laughing away. Mom's still trying to shush us and keep things quiet. Auntie May continues her story, though. She said, finally, you stopped. And I thought, oh, they must see me. And I thought I'd catch you. I got close enough, I could almost reach out and touch the car. But then, you drove away again. By now, we're just howling in the back seat. Even my mom is starting to laugh. And before long, well, you know it, Auntie May was laughing too. When we did get back to the motel and met my dad, what a story we had to tell him. and we laughed about that experience that entire feast, and on many more trips in the future. It was always, always a very special memory. Well, brethren, you've snickered and giggled a little bit at my story, and I'll tell you, that's my funniest Auntie May story. I've given you the best one today. But there's a good reason that I've shared it with you. I believe it makes the perfect introduction to today's split sermon. If you're looking for a title, I've simply called it this: God's feasts are for the family. God's feasts are for the family. Now, as I've told you, my father's family did not attend the church, yet he always brought us along to the fall festivals. We didn't understand why we were there. We just knew this was something for Dad's church. This was some kind of annual fall pilgrimage that we made to the Poconos or Niagara Falls or wherever else we went. And we just accepted it as something for his church. Well, in reality, there were reasons why my dad was there and why he brought all of us with him. Turn with me, please, to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 16. We're going to begin reading in verse 16. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 16. 3 times a year all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, at the Feast of Weeks, and at the Feast of Tabernacles. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord, your God, which he has given you. I told you there were reasons why my dad went to the feast. And right here, we've just read two of them. God commands that members appear before him at the place God chooses. And my dad did so. It was the Poconos, and he was there. But in addition, he was told not to show up empty-handed. He brought an offering. We do those same things today. But truth be told, that doesn't address the question, why did my dad bring the rest of the family? Dad certainly did not need my help to bring an offering. We never had a trail drive of cattle, a herd of cattle, to the Poconos. Oh, what a thrill that would have been for an 8-year-old boy, I can assure you. No, we never did that. I know my dad had a little green envelope. And again, being a little boy, I saw it different times, and I can remember asking, what's that? That was his offering. He didn't need my help to do that. Nor did my father need his children's help to drive to the Feast of Tabernacles. I told you I was 8 years old. He didn't even need our help reading maps to get there. My sister was even worse with maps than I am. I remember one morning my dad said to her as we sat down at the breakfast table there in the restaurant, "Young lady, we're going to have map reading practice." You know how in some of the restaurants they'd have placemats out that would have a little map of the area there? I mean, have any of you ever seen those? Okay, I guess a few of you know what I mean. But anyway, Dad said, if I wanted to get from here down there, how would we go? Well, my sister thought for a moment, and then she said, well, Daddy, I would take the blue road. My dad looked at it and said, blue road? Blue road? Oh, that's a river. Let's continue here in Deuteronomy 16. This time, though, let's drop back to verse 13. You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles 7 days, when you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your winepress, and you shall rejoice in your feast. Rejoice in your feast. That's a third reason why my dad went to the Feast of Tabernacles. He was commanded to rejoice. I like that word, the Hebrew word that is translated rejoice. It means to cheer up, to be glad, to be merry, to have joy, to make joy. It's the same as we say rejoicing is today. It embodies happiness and joy. But notice, continuing, that list that comes afterwards, the list of the people who are to be rejoicing. You shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son. That was me. And your daughter. That was my sister. You know, the one sailing the boat on the Blue Road. Your manservant, your maidservant, the Levite, the stranger, the fatherless, the widow, who are within your gates. That list of people, sons, daughters, it's pretty clearly implied it would also include wives and mothers. Someone needs to be taking care of those little children, and little babies love their mothers. All of those people, the manservant, the maidservant, household servants or staffs, farmhands. We don't seem to have many of those in our modern society anymore, but years ago, in an agrarian culture, very, very much that was the case. The Levite, the ministry, you know, has been commanded not to set aside second tithe. God says they have no inheritance there. The stranger, the fatherless, the widow, those without family, or the wherewithal to attend these feast days otherwise. Even today, brethren, we set aside our second tithe. We're asked to send in a tithe of our second tithe to home office, or excess second tithe, which is also used to address this need of those who would not otherwise be able to attend. But the point is, brethren, all of these people are in the list that God said they're supposed to be there. They're supposed to come. You know, it's very much the way they stay down south. Y'all come. I had someone in Texas, a minister, explain to me one time what that meant. If he were to invite me to his house, he'd say, y'all come over. Come for supper. Just me, one person. Well, I'm a Yankee, and I think, well, that sounds plural. I said, well, if y'all means just one, how do you say y'all for more than one? I mean, what if he invites my whole family? He said, well, that's easy. It's all y'all. Well, that's what God says here. All y'all come to the feast. And y'all, all y'all, rejoice. Rejoice in the feast. All of these people are commanded to be there and to rejoice. I observed at a young age, different people are filled with joy by different things. My dad thoroughly enjoyed the antique railroad over there in Pennsylvania. My mother enjoyed the candle shop at Memory Town. Anybody here ever keep the feast in the Poconos? Okay, sure. Auntie May loved buying ribbon at the Ribbon Factory outlet. My sister just loved the shop. And yours truly? I fired my first shotgun at a shooting range in the Poconos. And I'll tell you, what a thrill that was. To see that clay pigeon coming across the horizon, watching it over that gun barrel, squeezing that trigger, and suddenly seeing it disappear into powder. I was rejoicing. My dad funded that with second tithe. Turn with me, please, back a few pages to Deuteronomy 14. We're going to read verses 22 through 27. Deuteronomy 14, starting in verse 22. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. And you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place where he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil, of the firstlings of your herds and of your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. Did you notice here? Again, we talk about, God talks about that location, the place where God chooses to make his name abide. That's very much like what we just read over in Deuteronomy 16. But we also just read that fourth reason why my dad attended the feast. He was told here, it's so that he, that all of us, will learn to fear the Lord our God always, obeying him, serving him, doing what he commands. That's part of the reason why we went to the feast. Notice here, in verse 23, God's instruction to eat this second tithe, which we have saved, eat it in the place that God chooses for us to observe that festival. In verse 24, if the journey is too long for you so that you're not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you when the Lord your God has blessed you. See, that was my situation. I couldn't have a trail drive all the way to the Poconos. That would have been a real rejoicing event for me if we had been able to do that. Always wanted to be a cowboy. But if that is the case, God says in verse 25, then you shall exchange it for money. Take the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. Again, God says, spend that second tithe for whatever you want. And he says, rejoice, be happy, enjoy. Second tithe is a wonderful thing. I don't know of anybody in God's church who does not enjoy getting to spend second tithe at the feast and with the direction from God for whatever your heart desires. For me, shooting that shotgun was a big deal. I don't know how old I was then, 10, 12. It meant a lot, though. Dad always made sure he gave us second tithe. He didn't tell us it was second tithe. He just always gave us money at the feast and said, you spend that on something you would enjoy. But notice here, for the final time, the emphasis here, God says, it's to be done by you and your household. God emphasizes again here the family. He mentions also in verse 27 the Levite. He's mentioned here again, just like we had read back in Deuteronomy 16. He said that he is not to be forsaken or forgotten because he has no inheritance. Clearly, God considers the Levite part of his family. Notice God's directive. He is not to be neglected. Well, I've shared with you my childhood feast recollections. We've discussed God's festival instructions. Now let's consider Jesus Christ's festival experiences as a human being on this earth. Turn with me, please, to Luke chapter 2. Luke chapter 2. We will read verses 41 through 52. Luke chapter 2, verse 41. Speaking of Jesus, his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. This time we're focusing on another one of God's annual festivals, but it's a spring festival, the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. When they had finished the days, because as we understand, they would have stayed probably for the entire festival of unleavened bread. When they had finished the days, as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother did not know it. But supposing him to have been in the company, they went a day's journey and sought him among their relatives and acquaintances. Now, according to the internet, the distance from Nazareth, where Jesus lived, in Jerusalem, is approximately 63 miles. If people had been traveling on foot, it probably would have taken about 5 days to make that journey. So Joseph and Mary had returned already a day's journey before they realized Christ was not among the company. They assumed he was with their family or their acquaintances. They might have thought, well, maybe he's with our aunts, our uncles, grandma, grandpa, something like that, or other friends who are part of our church family who would be also in this party. They assumed that was the case. And of course, you know the story. Verse 45, they did not find him. They returned to Jerusalem seeking him. It was after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, listening and asking questions. All who heard him were astonished at his understanding and his answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously." "Brethren, we would all be concerned if one of our children was missing." And that's what happened here. Mary and Joseph, though, had not worried initially because they thought he was just with some other family members who were in the group. And of course, you know the rest of the story. He said, "Why is it that you sought me? Did you not know I must be about my father's business?" They did not understand the statement which he spoke to them. They didn't fully understand at that point either. But it's quite evident Jesus Christ, as a child, went to the festivals with his parents. Turn over to John 7, verses 2 through 14. John 7, verses 2 through 14. At this point now, Jesus is an adult. In verse 2, we read, "Now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand." So we're back in the fall now. "His brothers therefore said to him, 'Depart from here and go to Judea with your disciples, that they may see the works that you are doing. For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world.' For even his brothers did not believe him. Then Jesus said to them, 'My time has not yet come, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me, because I testify of it that its works are evil.'" Verse 8, "You go up to this feast. I am not yet going up to the feast, for my time has not yet fully come." When he had said these things to them, he remained in Galilee. Well, clearly here, even as an adult, Jesus was accustomed to attending the feast. His brothers told him, "Go on up to the feast." Clearly, the family did. It was still a family event. But as noted here in verse 5, at this time, Christ's brothers did not believe in him, but the whole family was accustomed to going. Verse 10. "But when his brothers had gone up, he also went up to the feast, not openly, but as it were, in secret." Well, Jesus most definitely did attend the feast. Obviously, though, the entire family did as well. They were all in the custom of attending God's festivals. Let's turn back to Nehemiah, verse 8. Chapter 8. Ezra, Nehemiah, Esther, Job. Okay, Nehemiah 8. We're going to read two particular verses here. Verse 10, verse 12. And we're going to notice God's focus, again, still upon family in connection with his festivals. This is, as I said, under Ezra's return there to Jerusalem to be rebuilding the temple and that work. "Then he said to them, 'Go your way, eat the fat, drink the sweet, and send portions to those for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy to our Lord. Do not sorrow, for the joy of the Lord is your strength.'" It was during the fall festivals that these words are being spoken. And in verse 12, "So all the people went their way to eat and drink, to send portions, and to rejoice greatly." There's that word rejoicing again. "Because they understood the words that were declared to them." God's focus here that we need to glean is even upon those who are left behind at the feast. They're not to be forgotten. We're supposed to remember them. And here, God made it very plain. He said, "Send portions to those for whom nothing has been prepared." And I think many of us in God's church today make it a practice to send postcards or greeting cards or make phone calls to those unable to attend the feast. Perhaps bring them a gift, but certainly keep them in mind, keep them in our prayers, so that those unable to attend are not forgotten. Finally, turn with me please to the book of Zechariah, and we will turn to verse 14. Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah chapter 14. We're going to read verses 16 through 19. And the setting here, the instruction through the prophet Zechariah, is for the days following the return of Jesus Christ. It shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations who came up against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. Verse 17, and it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth that do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. Did you notice that? Even here, where God is explaining what's going to happen, what's going to be the price that will have to be paid by those who refuse to come to Jerusalem, to come to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. He specifically says here that the punishment is going to be no rain. But notice his wording. He says it's going to be on those of the families of the earth. There's that term family again, tightly interwoven with the festivals. Continuing in verse 18, if the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. They shall receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. There's that word used again, family. Clearly, God intends that people are expected to attend His festivals, and this will still be the case even after the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. But notice here, even where God describes the punishment for failure to attend His festivals, God references and speaks clearly of families of nations. Well, brethren, very clearly, God desires, He intends His festivals to be observed by the whole world and by the whole family. He stresses this continually. As we read these verses, these accounts this morning, family, festival, they have been tightly interwoven. Well, I need to tell you, Auntie May died on the Day of Atonement in 2011. She was 93 years old. And even during the final years of her life, we used to laugh together. I'd go to visit her, and we'd recount those feast trips and travels that we had made together. We'd laugh together, but most heartily over the story of the Pocono parking lot, her chasing the car and never seeming to catch it. We laughed about that for many, many years, and even right up till the final days of her life, she was still joking about that and laughing about it. Auntie May did not fully understand why we were there at the Poconos at the Feast of Tabernacles. She didn't understand it then, but I believe that someday, she will. But one thing Auntie May did understand, and that was the importance of family. I'll tell you truthfully, she was a good aunt. There was only one Auntie May. God places great importance upon His festivals, and He also places great importance upon family. You know, God's fall festivals are now only a few weeks away. This is the final opportunity I will have to address all of you from this lectern prior to that time. So I just want to extend to all of you, on behalf of the Thuvenin family, wishes for a very meaningful and joyous fall festival season. I hope that it's wonderful for everyone and that we can all observe these days as God intends. Let's endeavor to make that a priority, to properly observe these days as God instructs. And as we do so, let's strive to make it a family feast.